Thanks for checking out another podcast from TealTownUSA.com. In this episode, we sit down with Sharks General Manager Doug Wilson and discuss the strategy of the San Jose Sharks drafting, contract extensions, NHL expansion, being in San Jose from day one of the franchise, and more.
Welcome to this special Teal Town USA interview on TealTownUSA.com. I'm Eric Carell alongside AJ Strong. With us today, very honored to have the first Sharks captain in franchise history and currently the general manager of the San Jose Sharks, Doug Wilson. Thank you for joining us today, Doug.
Well, thanks for having me on, but I think by saying I was the first captain, it just makes me feel old.
Well, it's just, you know, me and AJ have followed you since day one when you were acquired from Chicago. And we're with the Blackhawks and kind of been with the organization, you know, for the most part since day one. There was some time in between here, there, but we appreciate you doing this for us. So thank you very much, AJ.
I know we spoke about it at a previous Ice Insights, but since drafting Vlasic, the Sharks have not had strong drafts involving defensive picks in the early rounds, whether it be Ty Wisser, Nick Petrecki, Doherty, Wren, Mueller, etc. Yet you've also been quite successful with picks in the late rounds. We've also seen in the last draft that you went with what most consider a high-risk, high-reward in Ryan Merkley. What have the Sharks done to change their draft strategy moving forward, especially on the defensive side?
Yeah, well, the game has changed. Let me just go back on our draft strategy or draft approach. Obviously, our average draft pick is in the 22nd or 23rd spot. So when you have the success we've had as a team, and when you also go back and you take a look at some of the picks, how we utilized our first-round picks, whether it be in trade, you know, for Brent Burns or Martin Jones, and then you take a look at Tomáš Hertl, I think we'll take him as a player. Timo Meier, I don't think we have any problem with that one, too. So when you look at it, you've got to take into consideration the reality of the situation, where you're drafting from. And you've got to take some swings when you're drafting later like that. At that point, bigger bodies, where the players fell, you know, things are going to happen where it doesn't work out. But I think we've actually been very fortunate. Since 2003, I think we've probably had the most man games played by guys that we've picked. And in our scouts, and I'm glad you mentioned it, when you take a look at what we've acquired in later picks and the quality of people, whether it be our captain in the seventh round or Mark-Edward Vlasic, Justin Braun, etc., so the realities are, you've got to be, when you're coming in to make selections, and I think you're asking about Ryan Merkley this year, the game has changed. The game has evolved. So when you're making picks, you want to forecast not just where the game is at, but where it's going. And you're seeing a lot of guys that are difference makers, could be maybe 4 or 5 years ago when teams were going and the game was different, bigger, more physical players. So you try and be open-minded, very current in your thought process and who you acquire, whether it be through a draft or through trades. And I think our scouting staff has been very open-minded to that while having one hand tied behind their back, drafting as late as we have.
You've also been long known as a GM that would not do deals for longer than 5 years, but recently we've seen a change where Vlasic, Burns, Couture, Kane, Jones have all gotten recent deals for 6 or more years. Obviously, Couture getting 8, Burns getting 8. Is that a new strategy or philosophy you have moving forward?
It's the reality of the collective bargaining agreement. I mean, there's the high-end players. I mean, that's really what was taking place. And I'm not sure there's enough high-end players to go around when you're splitting it with this many many teams. It also makes it easier if I'm going to take the risk of giving a player a long-term contract, the fact that we know the player, we know his injury history, we know his character, I'd rather do it with as much knowledge as possible. And it's also players that want to be here, you know, how they train, how they you know, create our culture. So that's, it minimizes the risk a little bit. You know, you can go into the UFA market and sign players you don't truly have all the background on them. So that's kind of what we've done, partially CBA-based, partially that's the necessity to keep these players. You don't want to lose some of your key players and get nothing in return. And we've been pretty proactive. And the fact that players like Martin Jones, Mark-Edward Vlasic, Logan Couture, Tomáš Hertl, Evander Kane, they want to be here and they make those commitments because they have options too.
One of the well-known philosophies in Bay Area sports was with Bill Walsh when he was the head coach of the 49ers. He went with the philosophy that it's better to trade a guy a year too early rather than a year too late. Do you believe in that particular philosophy, or is it kind of vary by player as their roles kind of emerge for the organization?
Well, first of all, Bill Walsh was kind enough to give me the gift of time and spend some time and share a lot of his thoughts. He was intrigued with the game of hockey, too. So I used to go up to Palo Alto and have lunch with him on occasion, and he shared a lot of his thoughts. Football and hockey are different. I mean, we have long-term guaranteed contracts. You know, certain key positional players, obviously, supply and demand dictates that. As I say, there aren't that many good players in key positions. So if you can find centermen or D-men or number one goalies, if you let them go, it's very tough to replace them. So you've got to take all those factors into consideration. Again, tying in where the game is at, where it's going, is a player, does he have the ingredients or physical makeup? Is he symmetrical? Is he a natural athlete that can actually play longer than maybe some other players that could fall off a little quicker? You have to take all that into consideration. You try to make all your decisions with as much information as possible and base it with the reality of supply and demand.
So kind of piggytailing back to drafting a little bit, do you firmly believe drafting entirely to the scouts, or have there been times where you've overruled their ideas as for the right player to pick at a certain time in the draft?
I think we have quality scouting staff. We really do. Tim Burke has done an outstanding job. And you got to remember, player acquisition is not just drafting. It's free agent acquisition. You know, we've added three more guys this year in Proplin, Radil, and Suomela. We've added the Donskoys and Carlsons and Heeds in the past. So every year, you know, we've added 10 or 11 players. And identifying the skill sets of players, identifying, again, how you want to play, how your coach wants to approach the game. We're very inclusive with everybody. Bill Walsh is one of the ones, a wise man uses all his resources. So we're very inclusive with our coaching staff, with our scouts. But I'm not going to come in and overrule scouts that are on the road 200 days of the year, work their butts off, and I trust them. If they ask me a question, obviously, you know, I'll share my thoughts. I'll sit in the meetings with them. But, you know, specifically in scouting, I let them do their job. If we go into a trade situation, example Brent Burns, where it was involving a draft pick, some players, how we were going to play, I included all our staff in that, and we made a decision to move, you know, some good players and a first round pick. I think it worked out well, but it was also one of those things that best idea wins, and I want input from our people and our staff, and they feel comfortable stepping up and sharing their thoughts.
Funny you should bring up that deal. While you haven't made a lot of what some might call blockbuster deals, the ones that you have made, you appear to have essentially won them all, whether it was bringing in Thornton, Boyle, Burns, huge pieces that have really put the team over the top. However, hindsight clearly is 20/20. So is there a deal that you think that, oh God, I really wish that could have gone a little differently?
Well, it's tough because I can't talk about other teams' players, and I have such great respect for all the other GMs in the league that I wouldn't share the insight to those conversations. But I will say this. We've made trades with every other team in the league, and I think it's not about trying to win a deal. It's trying to make a deal that makes sense to both sides. You know, we're a today team trying to win. Some of the deals we do are with teams maybe that are trying to rebuild or, want some younger assets. The fact that we get included in every discussion is because we have done big deals, and we've done as many big deals as anybody, as you say, whether it be the Thornton or Burns or Danny Boyle or Evander Kane, Martin Jones, etc. So we're not afraid to take a swing, but deals have to make sense. You know, there's deals that I get offered all the time, non-starters or certain players that they're asking for. There's certain guys that are very difficult to move for a lot of different reasons, but I also, and last year is a great example, we've got some really good young players that we may not over-promote and over-hype, but we know are good players, and we believe And when they step up and play the way that they did last year, the Hurdles and Myers and Tierneys and Donskoys, we know that they can play. And giving young players an opportunity in this environment where they've been mentored by guys like Jumbo and Logan and Pavs, we know what they're capable of. And your team has to be a blend of those things. You know, the high-end guys in certain positions, guys in their prime that are stepping up to the next level, and young guys that can come in and make a difference. That's how we got to the Cup Finals a couple of years ago by, four lines, 6D, and 2D, or two goalies. And we are the sum of all our parts, and a lot of it is the character and culture of our group.
As I mentioned before, you were one of the original San Jose Sharks. You're the team's first captain. You've been with this team now in several capacities. How much of an attachment do you have to this club? Do you feel the same, if not more, of a pressure or responsibility for the success of the club than other GMs that don't have the history of being with the same club since day one with their respective organizations? And has being involved with San Jose flavored your perspective?
Well, coming here in 1991 was a huge decision for both myself and our family. And it all starts at the top. Every organization starts at the top, and I mean ownership. Mr. Gund was incredible, his passion for the game, his love for the game. And all the way through the years, all the owners that we've had have cared about this team. They've cared about this community. And Hasso Plattner, he loves this team and this community. And my responsibility is to do the right thing for, our fan base, our owner. I want to put the best team on the ice every year and give our players and coaches, when I look at them, a chance to win every single year. I don't believe in the, going in a scorched earth rebuild for 5 or 6 years, because how can I look at a coach or a player that I know is working their butts off and committed a contract and I'm not giving them the opportunity to win? We also want players that are involved in this community that make us proud. And all my owners have always wanted that, is to make sure we've got good people. And I'll be honest with you, I'm extremely proud of our players, not only as hockey players, but as people. We never have to ask them twice if there's something that our foundation or is needed in our community. And I'm biased. I think hockey players are special. But I think the people we've had be part of this organization, I'm extremely proud of. And I take that responsibility seriously. I do.
How are you planning to prepare for another expansion draft coming in with Seattle joining the league? We all saw what Las Vegas was able to do. Maybe GMs might take a different approach this time around. And for that matter, is there a concern for preparing the Sharks and Barracuda lineups for a potential labor stoppage in 2020?
You have to take all those things into consideration. We put a lot of preparation time into the Vegas expansion situation, and we feel, we came out of it, we lost David Schlemko, we cash the expansion check, so that you're going to, for that revenue, you're going to have a loss. And we felt comfortable with some of the young guys coming that would be an approach we took. But we did put a lot of work into that, not judging other teams, their approaches. I don't know if you asked teams that got overly creative and offered up picks and players and things to maybe find a unique way to come out of the expansion draft. They might not want to do that again, but that's each individual team's choice. You must give Vegas, George McPhee and Jared Gallant a lot of credit, because they picked players that fit with where the game is at and where it's going. And, there's a lesson learned, and we took some things that they did, how they approached their game, and applied it to our team. And there's teams that, we'll look at it and say, well, maybe we're a little bit behind because we didn't adjust our team or our roster. And you got to be open-minded and willing to change or learn things from other teams that have success. And we feel we're in a good position. We think we've done that.
One of the questions that we get a lot of on Twitter is, what are the benefits to the organization to consistently include no move clauses or no trade clauses with new contracts? I remember going back and looking at LA, I believe, on their 2014 Cup run, and at that point, it seemed like almost half the Sharks had some sort of a clause, whereas there was only one with LA. Doesn't that tie your hands or limit the moves you can make?
We are actually, we don't have many no moves, complete no moves, which is very restrictive. We have creative ability to basically have options on every player. So I think what people don't quite get is there's a difference between a no move, which means you simply cannot move a player, to a limited no move where you have a list of teams. And we want our players, you know, to want to be here, and we appreciate that. But there's always the opportunity with the structure of our teams that players list, and opportunities to move somebody if something, you know, a situation arose. So we're not limited in any way by that. We're not.
I guess with everything now that the draft and free agency is pretty much done, as it stands right now, are there pieces you are still looking for in some form, whether it's a trade or a free agent pickup? Or are you looking more internally with the prospects that you have? And for that matter, how has development camp looked so far in your eyes?
Well, first of all, we feel we have a very good hockey team. I mean, this team you know, scored 100 points last year. We had 252 goals we scored, and we didn't have the luxury of having Joe Thornton or Vander Kane for the majority of the season. So, you know, we like where our team is at. We think that some of the young guys that stepped up last year, we talked about Hurdle and Meyer and Tierney, for example, but we got another group of guys that we think are ready to jump too. You know, Marcus Sorensen, for example. Jonas Donskoy's got more to him. Guys like Rudy Balcers and players like that. Kevin LeBanc. So we think we're in a position, one, that we have a good hockey team, and most importantly, our players believe in that. That's why Jumbo re-signs here, or Logan, or Hurdle. They know what we have in there. They also know our younger players because, you know, by having the Barracuda out here, they see these players. They're involved with them in captain skate. Players know before anybody else if somebody can play. Even some of the free agents. I mentioned Praplin, Radil, and Suomela. These are not kids. These are kids that, you know, guys that are 23, 24, 27, much like Donskoy and Carlson, can come in and play. So having said all that, we also have cap space. We have a lot of good young players and things in place that our history has been that we've gone out and acquired players through trade. How did we get Evander Kane? We waited. We were looking for the right fit, for the right person. If I'm going to give up, you know, assets, I want it to be a player that fits for both now and the future. And you know, that's, again, that's how we acquired Jumbo. It's how we got Bernsey. It's how we got Kaner. It's how we got Danny Boyle. You know, it's how we got Martin Jones. And everything comes at a cost. And you've got to make sure that, you know, it's the right fit that you're looking for. There'll be lots of opportunities to explore things. And I think our history speaks pretty fairly to that.
Well, thanks so much for spending the time with us. We really appreciate it. I would say, finally, is there anything else, one little tidbit that you might want to share with our audience?
No, I'll be honest with you. We love talking hockey, and I appreciate the fact that you took time to come down here. And you know, sometimes we give you a little narrative with some background information on things, but we love talking hockey, so thank you.
Thanks for checking out another podcast from TealTownUSA.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us at TealTownUSA on Twitter and on Instagram, and make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit that notification button to find out the next time we go live. And finally, make sure you subscribe to the SoundCloud account for Teal Town USA to catch all our exclusive audio programming.